Chapter 15.
"Going to the Ashen Tower is folly," Jin hollered, slamming his palm down on the table. There was a brief lull in the raucous commotion of Bloodroot's longhouse, but once the orcish patrons realized it wasn't the sound of a bar brawl starting, they quickly returned to bar brawls already in progress. An orcish longhouse, Gorm decided, was much like any other tavern, except that it was long instead of tall, and everything was stronger. The beer stung like dwarven whiskey. The food was spiced with pungent peppers that burned Gorm's tongue. The orcs that lined the long tables were quick to prove their might with boisterous, almost jovial fights, and the bartender keeping the chaos in check was almost as big as Chief Sirthraka.
"We don't even know the stones are there," hissed Jin.
"Aye, but we don't have a better lead, do we?" asked Gorm.
"It's barely a lead," said the Noctomancer. "It's the word of a known smuggler, desperate to have you out of his hut. For all we know, he's sending us into a trap."
"Still the best lead we have," said Gorm.
"How far is it?" asked Niln. "No more than 2 days' ride to the northeast, if the maps are right," Caitha said. "It's close enough, to be sure. The question is whether we're ready to go riding into the lair of a potential necromancer."
"The answer, by the way, is no, not at all," said Heraldin.
Geist nodded in agreement.
"If there's a necromancer there with half as much gold as Gabrang said, we won't have any problem getting reinforcements," said Gorm.
"You're not seriously considering this, are you?" said Jin.
All eyes turned to Niln. Niln's eyes turned to Gorm.
Excuse me!"
The High Scribe slipped from the bench and ran from the longhouse. The other heroes stared after him, perplexed.
"Did he just run away from us?" Laruna asked.
"I should probably check on him. Glebe, or Tibrin,"
his squire's new name, which was to say his old name, was proving a difficult adjustment.
"Zog, zog."
Fortunately, a human in white robes attracted a lot of attention in an orc village, so it was easy to find orcs who could direct Gorm to Niln. The High Scribe was sitting on a boulder a little way beyond the town gate, looking up at the stars.
"Do you know what the Shadowkin call professional heroes?" Niln asked as Gorm sat down beside him. "In their own tongue?"
"My shadow tongue ain't so good."
"Goldhounds," said Niln. "Chief Sirthraka told me. It's because they hunt orcs down and kill them once they get the scent of gold."
"That's clever."
"And accurate by the stories they tell."
Gorm couldn't deny it. He couldn't even deny being a part of it. For a time they sat and watched the stars come out. Fulgen's light flared brightest of them all, an azure lantern shining across the heavens. Niln eventually broke the silence.
"I always thought of heroes as these paragons, archetypes of man," he said. "The best we had to offer. That's what the stories and ballads tell us. They're just average people with pure hearts and righteous intentions, and then, I don't know, things work out for them. They save the day. And it's not because they're strong, or skilled, or have ridiculously sharp flaming swords. I mean, maybe they have strength and skill and weapons, but the villain has those things too. They're not the reason the heroes win. In the legends, the heroes win because they're good."
Gorm sighed.
"But those are just stories. The truth is that mankind needs to be defended from monsters, and doing as much takes stone-hearted killers. There ain't no honor in it. It's a job. Sometimes the ones who are best at it ain't much better than the monsters themselves."
"I knew we were hired swords. I just thought we could still be something more. I thought we had purpose."
"If the common folk didn't believe in the cause, how could they stand to have us among them? And if professional heroes didn't believe in it, how much worse off would we be? The stories of good and noble heroes may be a facade, but when we believe it, it gets a little closer to becoming reality. It's the lie we need to believe."
Niln had the mournful eyes of a dog in a downpour. "So, that's it? We run around killing and looting just to line our pockets and marginally improve people's disposition?"
Gorm shrugged.
"It beats accounting."
"But didn't you ever think there was something more? Destiny? A reason for all of this?"
"I did," Gorm said softly. "And then I learned better."
"As have I," said Niln. He wiped a tear from his eye. "And now the party expects me to know what to do. They're asking me where to go, or what's next. I can't face them and say I've no idea what we should be doing. Before, I was following the Allmother, seeking our destiny. But now I'm not sure we have a purpose, and I don't know what the goddess is doing anymore."
She's giving me and all them other heroes another chance, said Gorm. Caitha, Haraldin, Jin, Laruna, even Geist. We all had careers in the gutter before you came along. If we finish this quest, we have our careers again. I can go home to me old clan, Niln. Caitha can be the Jade Wind again. Haraldin probably won't change much, but at least he'll be gainfully employed. And you'll have helped your temple in the eyes of the people.
Those may be nice things, but I have dedicated most of my life to this quest, Gorm, sighed the priest. I didn't give all of that up to provide employment opportunities, nor for public relations. It was to bring the seventh hero.
Jobs and goodwill are more than nice things, lad. And we may not believe everything you say, but you're good, Niln. The way heroes are supposed to be good.
Don't flatter me.
I ain't in the habit of flattering anybody. People think I'm special because I punched an elf for Tibrin, but I treated that goblin like the dirt on me boots when first we met. It took me days before I'd look him in the eye. And the first time ye met him, you were as kind to him as you'd be to anybody. Ye may not be a better hero than me, Niln, but I'll have Beedrin's boots if ye ain't a better person. In the end, maybe that's worth more than all me strength.
The High Scribe met Gorm's gaze. Or maybe that's the lie you need me to believe. Gorm looked away. We will go to the Ashen Tower, said Niln, hopping down off the rock. I trust you in this.
Niln,
please allow me the dignity of walking back on my own, said Niln. I'd not have the others thinking you've fetched me.
Aye, said Gorm. I'll catch up with you later.
The High Scribe thanked him softly and walked back to the town gates, leaving Gorm to ponder their exchange. He leaned back on the rock and watched Fulgen's light glow in the night sky.
So, was it true?
Asked the rock. Gorm startled and fell, cursing and sputtering, into the dusty road.
Sorry, said Thane, mid-shift from stone to troll. I forget. Where have you been, anyway? Gorm hissed. You were supposed to be keeping watch.
The troll's spine and shoulders cracked as he stretched.
I have been keeping watch. Well, you're doing a fine job of it. A whole troop of orcs marched into our camp. Yes, but they were only selling things. Good things, too. Look at this. New outfit.
The troll gestured at the bandolier and loincloth he wore. They looked exactly like his old outfit, except cleaner and dyed in the bright colors orcs favored.
Aye, but how could you have been sure those orcs weren't going to attack? They were wearing green beads over orange, Thane said, in a manner that suggested it was obvious. What does that even... Never mind that. The point is that you let intruders into the camp without so much as a warning. Fair enough. It won't happen again. Perhaps we need a signal that there's something amiss. Like, I could throw a rock to get your attention.
Thane casually picked up a head-sized chunk of granite.
Don't you think that would get a lot more attention than just mine? Well, you have to make sure it hits out of sight and lands somewhere soft, Thane said. But don't worry, I'm very good at throwing rocks.
Gorm had a vision of a small boulder crashing through his tent in the pre-dawn hours.
Why don't you whistle instead? If you like,
the troll set down the stone, clearly disappointed.
I just think a rock would be harder to miss. Not missing is what I'm afraid of, said Gorm. Regardless, we leave at dawn. I should probably be getting back to the longhouse to hit the hay. Where are we going next?
Thane asked.
We head to the Ashen Tower. What's in the Ashen Tower?
Gorm turned his eyes to the northeast, where Fulgen's light glittered over the pines of western Ruskin.
That's what I aim to find out.
This is a fool's errand, Jin muttered.
No, Haraldin is keeping watch, said Laruna, clambering over a fallen stone. Finding a magically concealed door is a mage's errand.
Ha. I spoke of the entire expedition, said Jin. There clearly isn't anything in the Ashen Tower. We would have seen some sign of activity, would we not?
Laruna had to admit that the ruined tower certainly seemed empty. They hadn't encountered a single soul around the courtyard, nor any soulless corpses. There were no coils of celadon mist emanating from its high windows, no violet flames in the baroque braziers that ringed the grounds, no apocalyptic clouds swirling ominously above its ruined spire. If a necromancer was plying his foul trade here, he had forgotten to hang his metaphorical slate above the door.
Still,
All the better to search the place and be done with it, said Laruna. Come on.
Like any good wizard's stronghold, the Ashen Tower had been designed to be accessed exclusively by the magically gifted. It had no door, nor any windows at the base, nor any seams to use as a hand or foothold. Gorm had tasked the mages with finding an entrance, while the other heroes searched for signs of activity around the tower grounds. After a full walk of the perimeter, however, the mages had yet to see any switches, statues, or similarly promising concealed mechanisms for gaining entry. Laruna pressed her hands to the wall and was surprised to find her skin blackened when she pulled away.
Is this soot?
Jin nodded. The tower is said to be white marble under the ash. The pine forests around us are bound to an eternal cycle. They burn down every few decades and grow up again. The tower always stands, either surrounded by a forest or a field of ashes, stained with the smoke of an age's fires.
How do you know all this?
I read it on the commemorative plaque, said Jin, pointing to a small granite and brass monument. I think they put it up after Johann's adventure here.
When he killed the necromancer.
Jin pursed his lips and nodded. Many noctomancers were reluctant to speak of necromancers, in the way that temple-goers avoided talking about crazed zealots, or kings seldom spoke of past tyrants. The Order of the Moon's reputation was constantly tainted by those few who had crossed the line between speaking with the dead and inviting them back for a spell. There had been a time when Laruna had been inclined to join in the disparagement of noctomancers, but lately she found many reasons to reconsider her old prejudices. Of course, she'd gained a better understanding of the Order of the Moon's philosophy through long talks after training, and her lessons had shown her the skill and dedication of noctomancers, but she'd also gained an appreciation for the fine cut of Jin's jaw and the sparkle in his cool blue eyes.
"What's that look for?" Jin asked, smiling.
"Nothing."
Laruna blushed and turned her attention back to the tower. She tried running her hands over another section of the wall and gasped. Beneath layers of ancient ash, currents of magic ran along the stone.
"Wherever it is, the door's still working. I can feel the conduits."
"The conduits might be there, even if the enchantments have failed."
Laruna concentrated a moment.
"No, they're active. Currents are flowing in them. They're all over the tower, even up to the top."
"When did you become so skilled with weaves that you could sense working conduits?" Jin marveled.
"I had a good teacher."
Jin looked doubtful. "Perhaps."
"I can follow the currents," Laruna added, walking along the wall, her fingers drawing faint lines in the ash.
The sorceress conduits ran over ornate stonework and beveled arches to a nondescript wall, where they changed course and joined new flows.
"There's something here. Didn't you already search this area?"
"I must have missed it," said Jin. "Still, the spell could be decades old, and there's no telling how they're configured."
"True," Laruna said, "but I don't need to."
"Wait!"
Jin's caution was too late. Laruna was already channeling. Glowing ethereal strands wrapped in serpentine spirals down her arms, spread out from her fingertips, and drew a glowing sigil of rings and jagged lines across the wall as her weave flowed into the conduits that ran along the tower.
"Laruna, you don't know what you're doing," Jin cautioned.
"That's the thing," said Laruna. "I know exactly what I'm doing."
Channeling magic through anything, be it an enchantment or a wand or even a mage, strained and weakened the channeler. Too much channeling would break enchantments, melt wands, or cause an overzealous mage to pass out. The amount of magic a channeler could handle before failing varied, but two things were certain. A channeler could handle only a finite amount of magic in any given time frame, and that finite amount was less than Laruna could manage. She poured more magic through the conduits. Her weaves were simple compared to the intricate enchantment they were illuminating, but they were also more powerful. The glowing lines along the tower began to wobble and heave under the stress. Safeguards and control mechanisms in the enchantment began to fail under the pressure of Laruna's magic. She didn't stop channeling until the enchantment gave a final tortured shudder and dissipated in a burst of golden light. Patterns of warm luminescence rippled over the stone beneath Laruna's hands, and then the wall partially crumbled inward.
These stones were probably supposed to swing open like a door, or fly out in some fancy pattern, she said, kicking in the masonry. But this works.
The ashen tower was open. Jin stepped up to the ruined door, staring in awe at the portal hewn into the side. You're ready, he said softly. No apprentice would think to overload the enchantment. Most mages couldn't do it, even if they had the idea. You aren't an apprentice anymore. You have my vote.
As he spoke, Laruna's robes began to change. A mage's clothing is not chosen for its appearance. Instead, its appearance depends upon the stature of the mage who wears it. A wizard who advances within his order finds that his robes grow more in finery, while a wizard who falls in rank may find his robes' gems receding back into the fabric. Each mage's attire is attuned to his or her sorceress abilities and to the order to which he or she belongs. With Jin's proclamation, Laruna finally had all of the votes needed to advance in her magical career. Gold and royal purple threads grew from the cuffs of her sunrise orange robe, embroidering flaming designs around the trim and hem. Ruby buttons and golden tassels sprouted. Laruna knew that distant enchanted ledgers were rewriting themselves to include her new rank. The sudden praise, the advancement, the change in her attire, everything caught Laruna off guard. The surge of emotions caught in her throat.
I had a good teacher.
The wizard seemed troubled. No, I have not been fair to you. Laruna struggled to speak, and her words were barely a whisper.
You were right to hold me back. I wasn't ready. Now I am.
The wizard was too wrapped up in his own apology to see the joy behind her tears. You just have to know that I'm sorry, and I never meant to hurt you. I've never meant anything to hurt. Laruna cut him off by pulling him into a kiss. His apologies and protests melted under the press of her lips.
No more apologies,
she whispered when she eventually loosed him from her embrace.
The past is behind us.
The wizard's expression fell somewhere between elation and slack-jawed zombie. Gah, he managed.
We can talk more when we're done in the tower, Laruna told him. For now, let's go tell Gorm.
Gah-ha-ha.
Or why don't you stand watch over the door instead?
Laruna told Jin with a quick peck on his cheek before making her way to the spot where she'd last seen the other heroes. She tried to hold back a wide grin as she walked, and couldn't bring herself to care when she failed.
Putzbug,
said Tibrin, waving a claw in front of his nose as he stepped through the doorway.
Bad smell.
Aye, it stinks of a tomb, agreed Gorm.
The base room of the Ashen Tower was stale and cool, but there were acrid hints in the musty air.
One with recent arrivals.
And a lot of visitors, Katha said, pointing to the floor.
Innumerable tracks had been stamped and dragged through the thick dust.
Somebody has been here recently. They don't seem to be here now, said Laruna.
Well then, let's search the place as fast as we can, said Gorm. I want to leave it far behind before dusk.
The Ashen Tower's interior was granite and ash-gray limestone, built in the stark, angular motif favored by dungeon architects everywhere. The furnishings were likely sparse and functional before Johann's triumph over Datar or Mayan, but now the rooms were bare. Everything left was broken and rotting. Everything of value had been carted off 20 years ago as Johann's spoils. Even the wall sconces were missing.
I'm surprised they left the door hinges, sneered Jin.
The first floor of the tower contained just a couple of rooms filled with dust and cobwebs. The second floor held more promise. One of its chambers was filled with discarded crates, several bearing the Piscine sigil of the Leviathan Project.
Gabarang's story checks out, said Gorm, searching through the empty crates. Somebody's definitely been through here recently.
It doesn't make any sense, said Jin. Why would this master come back here? Why go to the effort of bringing this back?
Perhaps it is Dertar or Mayan's son come back for revenge, said Laruna.
Gorm saw her give Jin a strange smile. He didn't return it.
Doubtful, he said.
We should be so lucky, said Katha. If the songs are half accurate, he's the kind of villain you'd want to face.
Yes, the kind that would soil his pants and flee when we arrived, said Heraldin, laughing.
Indeed, said Jin humorlessly. But barring that hilarious possibility, I wonder who actually did this.
Only one way to find out, said Gorm. Let's head upstairs. Stay close, Tibrin.
Stay close.
The third floor was made up of long, empty larders and servants' quarters built around a small kitchen. The fourth was an old laboratory filled with broken glass and bloody stains, and rows of cages of various sizes. The fifth floor was the old living quarters, with ruined beds still rotting in two large bedrooms. The stairs to the sixth floor arrived at the remnants of a large door. Beyond the splintered oak, the entire floor was one ballroom, featureless aside from an old pedestal and a back staircase that led straight to the servants' quarters.
I didn't think there would be much call for a ballroom out here, said Caitha.
It probably doubles as a space for dark rituals, said Heraldin.
Or weddings, said Laruna.
Weddings? Asked Niln.
Dutar Ermion was trying to wed his son to Princess Marja when Johann killed him.
The Solomancer pointed to a claret-colored stain on the stone by the altar.
I bet this is where Johann beheaded the wizard. It's like we're standing on history, said Caitha.
Or stepping in it, said Heraldin, checking his boots. What we're doing is wasting time, Jin barked from the staircase. Whatever happened in this room, it didn't include the storage of the elven marbles.
He's right, said Niln,
already shuffling for the stairway. Gorm chewed the edges of his beard as he watched the high scribe head for the stairs. The apathy in the young high scribe's eyes, combined with his gait, put Gorm in mind of a Scribkin walking engine, a slow, purposeless plodding. He'd seen young heroes get distracted and hopeless before, and much like a Scribkin walking engine, they almost always ended in calamitous tragedy.
Something wrong with Niln? Asked Caitha.
I think he's learned the difference between being a hero and being a professional.
Ah.
He's also probably figured out that he ain't either of them.
That's harsh. Not untrue, but harsh, said Caitha. No wonder he looks so out of sorts.
The problem is that you can't last long in the field if you're half as distracted as he is.
The bigger problem will be if he goes from demoralized to desperate, said Caitha. He might actually try something heroic.
Gorm cringed at the thought. Just a few months ago, the well-regarded Silver Slayers were rumored to have met an unlikely end when their junior member broke rank and charged through a hatchery with an ill-advised war cry, awakening several acid drakes and their hungry progeny.
Let's hope not, eh? Come on.
The stairs to the seventh floor were covered in dust like fresh-fallen snow, and the only tracks Gorm could see were those of the heroes who went up before him.
Maybe Jin's got a point, Gorm said, arriving at the top of the staircase. Don't seem likely anything's up here when nobody's using these stairs.
Jin nodded, but said nothing.
On the other hand, said Laruna, there's a door.
She pointed to a massive set of oak doors, bound with black iron and a massive padlock. Faint enchantments of strengthening hummed in the air around the lock. Delicate yet sinister-looking devices lurked within the keyhole. The heroes quickly formed a huddle around the padlock.
That looks promising, Gorm said.
How so?
Asked Niln.
A big lock means big treasures, said Gorm.
Also big traps, said Caitha. What's the plan?
Simple, said Gorm. We need a thief, or an acquisitions expert.
All eyes swiveled to Heraldin.
Aha, yes, I can see why this situation warrants a specialist, said the bard reluctantly. However, you'll recall that, as a simple musician, I have left a certain lifestyle in my past.
What's the harm in temporarily coming out of retirement?
Said Gorm. I think I made it very clear at the tower that I don't—
But that was just a little lock, said Caitha. This one is so big, and full of traps and enchantments.
Aha, yes, I know, but—
It's the kind of lock people talk about, said Laruna, the kind you hear about in legends.
Yes, and as tempting as a once-in-a-lifetime lock such as this is, that kind of talk is exactly the problem. If it were to get back to certain individuals that I had picked such an amazing lock—
It's only this once, said Gorm.
I'd like to think that, I really would, but the life of an acquisitions specialist has a certain addictive nature. Heraldin's throat seemed to be drying up. It was very, very hard to stop, you see, although Benny Hookhand does offer a very motivating recovery program.
Well, I understand if you don't want to take on the challenge, said Gorm. It's a very big lock.
Don't misunderstand me, said Hereldon. "I can absolutely pick that lock. I mean, I could if I did that sort of thing. If I had the tools. Which I don't."
"Oh?"
Gorm snapped his fingers, and Gaist pulled a long leather folio from his cloak. Opening it revealed an extensive set of delicate picks and oddly shaped tension wires. "And you too, Gaist?" Hereldon said. He hung his head. "You've forced my hand. I would truly hate you, dwarf, if you weren't so bloody magnificent."
"So you'll do it?"
"If I must." The bard snapped into exuberant motion, plucking the lockpicks from Gaist's hands as he practically skipped to the giant lock. "I might as well enjoy it, no?"
"That ye might," said Gorm.
Seeing the bard kneel before the lock was like watching the old master smiths at their craft. He could see the same care in Heraldin's gleaming eyes, the attention to detail, the joy of an artist at work as he inspected the padlock from every angle. The bard caressed each tool gently as he considered them, feeling the weight of each piece in his hand.
"Are you quite ready?" said Jin.
"Hush," said Heraldin. Selecting the proper tools is the second most important aspect of an entry engineer's work, the most important being a high degree of dexterity.
"Dexterity?" asked Gorm.
"The agility of the fingers, the delicate skill of the hands," said Hereldon. He pulled an odd-shaped pick from the toolkit and flicked it with his finger, striking an odd chime that grew in intensity and caused the tip of the pick to glow. At the zenith of the glow, he plunged it into the lock and made a series of quick, precise motions. "Magical lightning trap!" A small burst of electricity fizzled harmlessly over the lock as Hereldon removed the glowing lockpick.
"Well done," said Laruna.
"It's all in the wrist," replied the relapsed thief. His hands darted over the picks and selected another to thrust into the lock. "Picking locks is all about deft hands." He paused in his work long enough to turn and waggle his brows at Katha. "And I am very good with my hands."
"It'd be a shame to have to break them again," said the ranger.
"You can't ruin this for me," said Hereldon, happily returning to his work. "Do watch yourselves. Nightshade needle trap." Hereldon twisted his pick, and a thin steel spike dripping with ominous purple fluid snapped from the lock hole. He inserted another strange tool, twisted them both counterclockwise, and caught the needle as it fell harmlessly from the lock.
"Two traps on the same lock?" asked Niln.
"No," said Hereldon, working several picks simultaneously in and out of the lock. "Three. Acid gas trap." With a coppery tinkling sound, several small mechanical parts poured out of the keyhole. A moment later, the bard extracted a small glass globe filled with viridescent liquid. "And now the defenses are down," said Hereldon. He attacked the lock with manifold tools and renewed vigor, his picks probing and plucking, twisting and clicking.
"Can you hurry this up?" said Jin.
"Not at all," said Hereldon, inserting another pick. "I'm going to savor every last moment." He chose one last pick, a large, ornate-looking tool, and delicately inserted it into a keyhole that was already sprouting a thick bouquet of picks and torsion wrenches. "And there you are," said the bard, leaping to his feet.
"It's unlocked?"
asked Gorm. "Unlocked," smirked Hereldon. "Don't be pedestrian." He twisted the largest pick half a twist to the left. The padlock shuddered for a couple of seconds, shedding bits of machinery as it spasmed, and then the lock fell apart and rained down on the floor. "Shall we?" asked the bard. He took a bow to light applause, then slipped the lock's dangling shackle from the doorway. A warmth spread over Gorm as the heavy doors swung open, and his grin spread with it. Old feelings were stirring within him, long-forgotten thrills shared by every veteran hero.
"Looks like we found us some loot," he said, rubbing his hands together.
The great study was filled to the brim with strange treasures and arcane equipment. Books and scrolls spilled out of overstuffed shelves, paintings and icons and charms hung from the walls, statues cast long shadows in the cobalt and crimson light of massive stained glass windows. Strange crystals perched on a contraption of great brass and steel rings that hung from the ceiling, spinning slowly on several different orbits. Everything looked old and powerful, and best of all, exceedingly valuable.
These are priceless artifacts, breathed Niln.
First rule of professional heroics, lad. Nothing's priceless,
said Gorm, giving an antiquated shield an appraising look.
Perhaps there is some money to be made on this job after all.
But what is all of this doing back here? Said Jin, staring in wonder and confusion. It was all hauled away after Johann.
And the master hauled it back, said Katha, whoever he is.
Come on, said Gorm. Let's find them statues.
They split up and attacked the room with merciless efficiency. Safes were cracked, chests were broken open, drawers were forced, shelves were stripped, and lockboxes pilfered as the heroes swept through the study.
It just doesn't make sense, said Jin,
his voice sounding almost distraught as he stared at the artifacts. Why is all this here?
Don't turn up your nose at good fortune, Katha advised him.
Yes, just take what you can carry, said Heraldin, his pockets bulging with treasures. I found them, cried Niln. The elven marbles!
Gorm let out a small whoop as he and the other heroes rushed to the table Niln had uncovered. The high scribe pulled back a heavy blanket to reveal the remaining burial stones. Gorm couldn't hold back a whoop of joy when he saw the four smooth, milky-white sculptures almost glowing in the cool light.
Well done, lad! Well done! He shouted,
grabbing Niln by the shoulders and shaking vigorously. The high scribe allowed himself a slight smile as he gave a small nod of appreciation.
We should probably get these out of here.
Yes, said Jin absently. Yes, let's get out of here.
Did anyone hear a whistling? Asked Katha.
A what?
Asked Gorm. The heroes stopped and listened.
It's more like a wet blowing noise, like a child spitting loudly, said Heraldin. Or like someone is trying to whistle, said Katha, cupping a hand to her pointed ear. And there!
I didn't hear anything, said Gorm.
I very distinctly heard someone mutter, sod this.
Gorm was about to ask for more information, when something crashed through the largest of the stained glass windows and tumbled to the floor. The heroes dove for cover under the assault.
What is it?
Hollered Katha.
It's a large rock, Laruna shouted.
No,
Gorm breathed. It was more than just a stone. It was a signal.
Trouble's coming, he cried, already sprinting for the doorway. Shut the door!
Geist had just pushed the great doors closed when something cried out at the base of the tower, a long, horrible howl that sent spiders creeping down Gorm's spine.
Intruders, said a voice as cold and dry as a tomb. Build a barricade,
shouted Gorm, pushing an empty bookshelf against the door. Geist and Katha joined him, while Heraldin and Niln grabbed an old table. Tibrin struggled to push a heavy chair into place.
What is it?
Asked Niln.
It's coming back to a necromancer's tower, and it's got a shout like a banshee's ballad, said Gorm. Whatever it is, I don't want to meet with it. And why aren't you helping?
He shouted at the mages. Jin was standing transfixed, his face paler than the elven marbles.
It can't be, he said.
Snap out of it, Gorm told him. Help us with the barricade!
No good, wailed Jin. No, no!
He lurched into motion and grabbed a bench, but instead of throwing it atop the barricade, the Noctomancer began his own stack of furnishings against the back wall.
What is he doing?
Gorm shouted to Laruna. The Solomancer wasn't any more helpful. She was totally engrossed, even perplexed by a large painting set on the back wall.
Look, Laruna said.
It depicted a man in royal purple robes standing next to a boy in a skull-themed sailor suit. Someone had slashed the painting about the wizard's head, obscuring everything between his thin beard and cruel eyes.
"Aye, it's the Tar Ermion," said Gorm.
"Nobody used the stairs up here," wailed Jin, pushing a bookshelf onto his pile. "He never used the stairs!"
"No, not the Tar," said Laruna. "Look! What are you gaping at?"
hollered Katha, throwing an ancient statue on the makeshift barricade.
"It's just a painting of the necromancer and his..."
Gorm lost his words. The boy in the painting looked every bit as dull and spineless as the ballads made him out to be, with a feckless face and a mop of shaggy raven hair. Yet there was something undeniably familiar in the way his heavy-lidded eyes regarded the viewer, a subtle strength in his jaw, an arrogance in his tiny smile.
"Is that..."
Sorcerous light flared on the wall behind Jin's makeshift barricade, and 1,000 pinpoints of magic raced through ancient paths to form the frame of a great doorway. The wall behind the furnishings parted like a sliding elven door, and the feeble barricade the Noctomancer had erected was blown inward with a crack of thunder. Jin himself was thrown to the floor in the blast.
"Who dares enter the Ashen Tower?" intoned the cold, hollow voice. A figure floated through the doorway in the wall, its feet hovering inches above the floor. It was like a tall man clad in dark, ornate robes, yet its hands were nothing but bone, and where its head should have been there was a pillar of amethyst flame surrounding, or perhaps suspending, a bleached skull. Orange pinpricks of light blazed from the eye sockets. Who would face the wrath of Dhatar Ermayan in his own... Oh, by the gods, it's you. The heroes followed the undead wizard's gaze to their own Noctomancer, sitting up amid the rubble of his barricade.
Father, said Jin,